We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
All right, welcome into this week's episode. My guest today is Kirby Hokut, the Director of Athletics at Texas Tech University. Kirby, thanks for joining me.
Well, Mike, absolutely. It's great to be with you. It's great to see you. And it's been too long since we talked last. And I thought we were better friends, but you've done 30 plus episodes and I just got the invitation. So I see where it falls.
Hey, you're hard to schedule. That's what I'm going to say. How about that?
Fair enough.
Yeah. No, look, it is great to catch up with you, and we do have some history together. And in fact, I'm actually going to talk about that here in a few minutes. I'm going to talk about our think tank days as we get on into the interview. But, you know, one of the things that I want to kind of go sequentially for just a second and flash back to your days at Kansas State, because as I was reading not only your bio, but just some articles, there were some things I thought that were worthy of attention. You know, we talk a lot about leadership and how people get into certain roles and what they're seeing in the industry and that kind of thing. And, you know, I think back on or look back on your time with Coach Snyder as a student athlete. And you were obviously a leader on those teams during those days. But the thing that really popped out to me was the number of people that were in and around the Kansas State football program during your time as a student athlete on campus. Certainly you had Coach Snyder himself, but Bob Stoops was a defensive coordinator and Jim Levitt was there on the staff. And I think Brent Venables was a GA, and Laird Veach, the AD at Memphis was on a team with you. Maybe you guys were captains. I can't remember exactly, but a lot of folks who have gone on to tremendous level of success in and around college athletics, both in the administration ranks and also in football still. And I really want you to reflect back on that for a few minutes, just to tell me, you know, so is it the people that created the scene or the scene that created people, right? We always talk about that kind of thing. So as you think about the folks that you were around there and what everybody has gone on to do today in many leadership roles, what do you think it was that existed in your Kansas State culture and with those specific people that have led to the successes that those folks have gone on to achieve? And those, by the way, Kirby, I know there are many more of your former teammates that have gone on to many other things as well. I'm highlighting the ones in athletics just for this moment.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. And, you know, that's going back some time. It's going back 1990 through 95 were my years as a student athlete. And we were just so fortunate. I was so fortunate to be a part of the Kansas State football program, to be a part of what Coach Snyder established at Kansas State. I was in his second recruiting class, and, you know, I saw a program that when I went to Manhattan, Kansas, all I knew about it was that K-State was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as being the worst college football program in America the year before we got there. And what we saw when we got there was not far from that truth. The facilities, the environment, the expectations around the program were as low as any program that I've ever seen. But, you know, the lessons that you learn there, Coach Snyder had a vision. He expected where we were going to grow that program. He surrounded himself with a great group of assistant coaches. You mentioned a few. There were others that went on to become Division I head football coaches. They had an eye for recruiting, and Kansas State was not recruiting at a really high level at that time, but they had the knack of finding, you know, what I would say to this day were hardworking individuals that were being passed over by other universities. These were kids such as myself that was a couple of inches too short. You were, you know, a second too slow, but you had the drive and the determination to be successful. And Coach Snyder put that vision out there, surrounded himself with a great group of assistant coaches. And, you know, we believed in his vision. He established a work ethic each and every day that we brought to that football program to build it. It was education through sports at the highest level. The lessons that they were teaching us those days, you didn't realize at the time. But today, as I reflect, I wouldn't be where I am today without the lessons that I learned, you know, under Coach Snyder and those 5 years of being a part of that Kansas State football program. So it is about people. It was, you know, about the staff that he surrounded himself with. It was about the young men that they were recruiting at that time and the bonds and friendships that we created in that locker room. And it's no different, Mike, than sitting in this chair or being in athletic administration. You're only going to be as successful as those that you have around you. And we had a pretty good team during those years for where Kansas State was trying to build that program.
So if I say the name Ernie Barrett, How does that resonate with your soul? And talk a little, you know, a lot of folks that listen to this podcast, Kirby, will not know who Ernie Barrett was, and would love to hear, at least as in some of the articles I've seen written about your time in athletics. I think he was formative in your early years, sort of helping you determine direction.
He was. Ernie is still known as Mr. Kansas State. Ernie was a great basketball player at Kansas State University, went on to play for the Boston Celtics in the NBA, came back to Kansas State as its athletics director. My years when I was a student athlete, Ernie at that time was serving as the associate athletics director for fundraising. And you know, through what was known as the capbacker events at the time, they would take the captains of the football team your senior year, and you would go do all the spring events, the golf tournaments, the barbecues, et cetera. And so got to know Ernie, one, from him just being around the football program, two, from those capbacker events. And, you know, I'll never forget, it was my senior season. After the season was over, Coach Snyder bussed us to Kansas City for a career fair. And at that time, I did not know what I wanted to do. I was a political science major, had gotten my degree, didn't know what I wanted to do. I remember Brent Venables at the time had come to me, and, you know, Brent started at middle linebacker my freshman, sophomore seasons, and then he became the graduate assistant, and I became the middle linebacker for two seasons. And Coach Snyder had, you know, ask Brent, hey, talk to Kirby. Does he want to be a defensive graduate assistant coach? Because he had elevated Brent up to a full-time assistant. And I didn't think on the field was the route that I wanted to pursue. Went to the career fair on the bus coming home from Kansas City. And Ernie Barrett came and sat beside me. And he said, what did you think? And I said, Ernie, I met a lot of great people tonight, but I'm still not sure. of what I want that next step to be. And Ernie said, would you have an interest in interning at the College Football Association? And I immediately said, I'd love to learn more about that. Absolutely. He said, it's located in Boulder, Colorado. My close personal and professional friend, this is Ernie talking, Chuck Ninus was the executive director of the College Football Association. And he said, they have an annual internship. Maybe I could get you an interview. And a couple of weeks later, I go to interview with the College Football Association with Chuck Ninus, received that internship opportunity. So Ernie opened that door for me. Ernie opened the door when my internship was over with Max Urich, the athletic director at the time, for me to return to Kansas State as the assistant director of marketing and promotions at that time. If I did not know the lesson before that moment in my career, I learned it, Mike, right then, is it's all relational. People open doors for people. And, you know, I've learned it every step along the way that relationships are so critical to everything that we do and everything that we accomplish and opportunities that we have within this profession. So Ernie Barrett has a special place in my heart, and always enjoy seeing him when we play Kansas State these days.
Great story. And I know you served for quite a time at Oklahoma before eventually becoming athletic director at Ohio. And you were 33 years old when you got that first job. I mean, by all measures, that's an opportunity at a young age in many ways. And that's really where I know we had known each other a little bit before, but where you and I started getting connected with another group of ADs. And I don't know if Kirby, it was officially called a think tank or not. I'll call it a think tank, right? So we had six or seven of us who got away every year and basically closed the door and visited about issues in college athletics and kicked around what might be happening in athletics and tried to just learn from each other. And with the notion that when we left the room, it was, you know, what the conversations were private conversations. And certainly we were able to enjoy some time with our spouses along the way too. But if you don't mind today, I mean, you are now one of the more senior athletic directors in the country. You were AD at Ohio and then at Miami of Florida, and then now for quite some time at Texas Tech. What are you doing today to help you continue to learn? And do you have a group of folks? It doesn't have to necessarily be college athletic directors, but folks that you lean on and rely on for candid feedback. Because as you know, Kirby, the higher you get on the tree and with more experience, sometimes you can start to believe you've got all the answers. Sometimes other people can believe you're not approachable. What are you doing personally to continue your growth?
You know, Mike, it's a great question and one that I spend a lot of time on. And you know, every day we try to get 1% better, right? You either grow or you go the opposite direction. I really believe that. But first, you mentioned my 7 years I spent at the University of Oklahoma, and going back to our previous conversation, it's all about relationships. When I was an intern with the College Football Association at the CFA annual meeting, at that time, I met a young athletics director by the name of Joe Castiglione and talked to him at a reception. And when Joe went to the University of Oklahoma from Missouri, I was working at the NCAA and I cold called Joe. And 3 weeks later, I'm the first employee that he hired at Oklahoma just right before he hired Bob Stoops. So again, it's all about relationships. And I think, you know, continued growth, professional learning is just that. It's relationships. You know, those years that we had the think tank that we spent considerable time together and shared, you know, lessons and challenges that we were navigating at the same time as athletics directors. Those are great memories. Those were great years that, you know, we leaned on each other. And it's the same today. You know, things evolve and grow. And I would say that when you've been at a university for 11 years, like I have at Texas Tech now, it's been an incredible 11 years. You form some really good relationships with donors, business leaders, individuals who have been incredibly successful in their journey and in their life. And, you know, I would say that a lot of my professional development and my ongoing communication comes from individuals that have been successful in business. Ed Whitaker is an alum here at Texas Tech. Ed Whitaker was is the only person to serve as the CEO of two Fortune 500 companies at AT&T and General Motors. You know, it was when General Motors went bankrupt, President Obama called Ed Whitaker to say, lead General Motors back. And, you know, Ed has become somebody who is a mentor of mine that I lean on, that, you know, I seek guidance and counsel from. And there's a handful of people, you know, that I've met over the years that have been in very successful roles that I look to and lean on. Chuck Ninus is still a mentor that I lean on quite frequently in this profession. And there are others, you know, that we've built relationships with over the course of our career. So, you know, there's a lot of things changing in intercollegiate athletics today. And, you know, I'm always trying to learn, to grow, and to do everything I can to make sure that, you know, we're navigating the waters that are in front of us as good as we can. And Mike, as you know, there are some really choppy waters today that we try to navigate.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in just a second. You know, I think your notion of you know, aligning yourself with some business leaders to learn is a good one, because you know, CEOs of companies in America have experienced a number of different things. You know, they maybe haven't lived the world that you live in terms of college athletics, but the experientially, you know, leadership is about decision making and guiding others. And I, you know, Joe Weller, who was the CEO of Nestle USA, became a good friend of mine when I was AD at Tennessee, and he lived in Los Angeles, but he was a guy that I leaned on because I think I shared some common values with him, other than just sitting in leadership roles. And he was a confidant and a guy who would speak candidly with me, but I didn't really think he was necessarily wanting something from an athletic perspective, right? He lived in LA, he didn't need a ticket, you know, or anything like that. And so I think that's an important part of the process, regardless of where you are and where you sit. And once you are in a leadership role like you are, with the public attention that you have at a place like Texas Tech and the other universities around the country, finding some common ground with other leaders is certainly critical. And I do think, Kirby, one of the things, you know, to challenge ourselves, it's easy today because of all the different changes in college athletics between alignment and everything else we're going through. It's easy for an AD to become siloed if they're not careful. And I do think, I'm not talking about collusion here when I'm getting ready to say what I'm going to say, but I do think it's important. There are some really heavy issues, you know, and heavy waters facing us in the next, you know, couple of years for sure. And the more that folks can talk openly and honestly and with candor, and hopefully keep the vision towards the industry as a whole. I mean, you're always going to have to represent your university, right? And that's where it starts, because that's where you're most obligated. That's where your paycheck comes from. But I think particularly those of you who are in senior roles in college athletics, it's incumbent upon you to be thinking broadly and talking with others who think broadly about the enterprise at large. I want to come back to the rough waters in just a second. The next thing I do want to hit on though for a moment is, you know, as an athletic director, one of the key things that you're going to oftentimes be judged around is let's call it your executive team and your coaching hires, right? And you've now had the opportunity to be at three different institutions, to hire a number of coaches in a number of different sports. You've had success with those hires. You've had a team play for a national championship in basketball. You've had multiple appearances in Omaha, a number of bowl games of significance. You yourself have been on the CFP committee and chaired that committee. What are you learning about yourself in terms of, like, here's the thing. So many times, particularly if you're younger in your athletic director career, it's easy to get caught up in the notion of the name when you're hiring someone. You know, whether that's in the media or your fan base, there's this churn. And you know that you have to separate the churn from the reality and determine who's the best fit for your particular university. And as you've now grown all these years in the role, how do you go about your business? And you, by the way, for those who listen know this, but you've had two significant changes in your program there in Lubbock this past year, right? And so how do you approach those kinds of things today with experience?
Yeah, you know, you continue to learn. And I think as I have gained more experience sitting in this chair, you become comfortable being uncomfortable. We've said that here recently. We've said that as we've gone through the pandemic. But I think just, you know, as you go through changes, you have to become comfortable being uncomfortable, and knowing that there's going to be times where there's a lot of noise around decisions, around certain circumstances that you're trying to navigate and lead through as an athletics director. And you're only going to be as successful as those you have around you. And, you know, in those times, for me to have a first class staff, a very talented staff who I trust, is so critical. So they can, you know, help me block the noise, but make sure I have the information that I need to have. And, you know, always trying to navigate and ask yourself the question each and every day is what's in the best interest of our student athletes and what's in the best interest of our university, and making sure that you always operate consistent with your set of values. And that I've learned that, you know, it's okay to not have all the answers going into a particular scenario. It's okay to go into a situation without the end in mind. And it's okay to take extra time. It's okay to take 72 additional hours. It's okay to take another week, because at the end of the day, people aren't going to remember how quickly you arrived at a decision or navigated through a situation. They're going to remember the end results. So I continue to learn. I continue to grow. I continue to be comfortable surrounding myself with others who are going to challenge me, who are going to ask tough questions, who are going to think differently than what I think. Because at the end of the day, it's most important for me to stand up and look the Red Raider Nation in the eyes and say, this is the best decision for our university, for Texas Tech. So, you know, surrounding yourself with people who are going to challenge you, are going to ask challenging questions, and being comfortable going into a situation where you're not exactly sure what the end result's going to be, but you have the confidence in your leadership abilities to navigate it every step along the way to make sure you end in the best position for Texas Tech.
So let's talk about some contemporaneous issues for a few minutes. I had a colleague, a friend of ours, who said that he has a basketball coach that told him he may never recruit a high school player again. And the notion from which that came was, I can watch the marketplace and through the portal be able to fill my squad. And I can do that because I can now have someone go and go to a place for a year and sort of see what happens with them. And when they come into the portal, make an evaluation based upon 1 year in the collegiate space. Is that statement concerning to you, that a coach would say that they would not recruit a high school kid? And by the way, this might have been hyperbole, right? So let's make sure we say that on the front end. But notionally, there's a reason this coach said this. So is that one of the outcomes of the portal that you're concerned about? Is that a real thing? You know, LSU has a coaching change, and I think the last I saw, every scholarship player has now left. So, you know, these are some changes. You know, the NFL has free agency, and they have some requirements around that. And by the way, I want to say this. I'm going to express my personal opinion for a second. I believe it's okay for students to have the ability to move in the marketplace. I'm just concerned about, you know, what are the right frameworks around that, right? Much like the NIL and where that may head, and we can talk about that too if you want. But first is, as you sit back and you begin to see some of these things that we've talked about for a long time that the marketplace needed, but we've gone from 0 to 70 like that versus a slower acceleration. Am I overstepping the concern there?
You know, Mike, every program, every team's at a little different position. I don't think you're overstating the landscape that we're watching evolve. And, you know, shame on us. We were probably too slow to act and too slow to evolve as an industry. And that has put us in a position where there are so many changes at this moment in time. And the thing that, you know, I observe and I think about, and that I want to challenge us to begin to change the conversation, is you don't hear one mention when we talk about the transfer portal, we talk about name, image, and likeness, about the value of the education that we're providing. And I think that intercollegiate athletics, if done the right way, is one of the greatest things in our country. I think the lessons that young people learn in competition and practice every day complements the lessons that they learn in the classroom. But we're not talking about the value of that education. So I'm with you. Student athletes should have the same opportunities as coaches, as administrators. If you're not satisfied at one university and you have an opportunity to go into the portal and go somewhere else, by all means, they should have that right. I've always felt that, you know, student athletes should have the same rights as every student on our campus to maximize from their name, image, and likeness. But for decades, there was no movement. And then all of a sudden, it seems like the floodgates are open. And, you know, I feel like there's good conversation that's happening around the transfer portal. And I think we'll continue to be able to navigate those waters, maybe put up certain parameters to guide those opportunities in the future. But I think right now we're uncertain as to how to even put parameters up, if that's even ever going to be an option with name, image, and likeness. And maybe it's not, but I think it's very concerning to see what's playing out across the country now with all of these collectives. And I'm not so sure that what's taking place in the marketplace is consistent with the spirit of name, image, and likeness. So, Mike, I think the scenario you laid out is very real. I think it's accurate, and it's one that, you know, not a single day goes by that I don't talk to one of my colleagues about, you know, what direction, what influence can we have, what needs to be done in the future to continue to provide the multitude of opportunities that we provide to student athletes in higher education to participate in college sports.
You know, I just got back from New Orleans, Kirby, and talking to a number of folks down there, NIL collectives was a subject that was bannered around by a lot of folks. And I think that the common theme, at least among a lot of folks I talked to, was there are some numbers that are out there that are, let's call them, shocking. And at the end of the day, there is a belief whether or not it will happen. I mean, the market's gonna act, right? I mean, we're in a capitalist society, and you know, if somebody pays somebody a certain amount, it's because they believe there's value in that. But I think it's so fresh and new right now that some of the, let's call it, extravagant numbers, at some point, those who are paying into collectors are going to expect some kind of ROI. So I do think that there'll be a leveling out of that over time. I still think that the collectors can be very helpful in the process. I think that the dollars can be what you and I would call significant. It's the outlier dollars, I think, that the market will adjust back at some point. And I don't know how you're seeing that in your colleague visits, but is there a common theme there?
A common theme of uncertainty uncomfortable. But you know what? It's different, right? It's different from state to state, even in our own conference. You know, in the state of Texas, we're guided by a state law. And, you know, as I talked to my colleague at West Virginia, they do not have a state law. So there's so many variables when you look at state by state, what's going on throughout the country. I do know that, you know, if you are not in a community, if you're not surrounded by a fan base who has an interest in the name, image, and likeness marketplace, then you're going to be at a competitive disadvantage. Talk to your coaches. Talk to them about the conversations that are taking place in the recruiting landscape today. And it's concerning, and it's something that we need to continue to keep in front of us. And you're exactly right. I believe what you just said. At some point, there'll be a market correction. This will all, you know, work itself out. But it's going to be an interesting play on how we get to that point in the years in front of us.
Well, look, it's here to stay. So we've got to figure it out. And there are, you know, what, 7 or 8 different things between realignment and portal and pandemic and, you know, social unrest and potential war and, you know, and so many other things that are there. And history shows that there have always been things, Kirby, and we've always found a way. I just think there are more things today than there have typically been. And the good news is there are folks like you that are helping navigate that. Let's end on a little bit less stressful note. Let's talk for just a second. Tell me the 2 or 3 things that you are most excited about around Texas Tech athletics right now and that you see on the horizon for your program over the next couple of years that get you excited.
Well, I'm really excited about the future of our football program. Joey McGuire, we've hired. He will be entering his first season next year. The reaction from our fan base has been incredible. We've had the highest season ticket renewal rate, 92% that we've experienced. The number of new season ticket sales have been at over a record pace right now. The young men in our locker room have responded so well to that change. Recruiting's going better than it's ever gone for the Red Raiders. So really excited about football. We ended the season on such a high note with a win over Mississippi State in the Liberty Bowl in Memphis. So that was a great momentum builder going into Coach McGuire's first season here. And then, you know, basketball has continued to be such a great source of pride when Mark Adams comes in. And in year one, we go 18-0 undefeated at home, play in the conference championship game of the conference basketball tournament, and, you know, advance to the Sweet 16, and had a great game in San Francisco against Duke, and it came down the last 2 minutes of the game. So, you know, just proud of the stage that Texas Tech continues to compete on. It's our goal, it's our aspiration that we're going to operate at the highest levels with integrity, and, you know, our teams are showing that we can compete at that level. Our golf team is in the top 5 in the country. Our baseball team's in the top 5 of the country. Both our men's and women's track teams are. So we have a lot of exciting things going on competitively here in Texas Tech.
That's awesome. So how do you keep yourself calibrated personally? Are you, you know, you work out, you read, you step away with your family, how you've got with all these things going on, you've got to occasionally get recalibrate personally. What are you doing to do that today?
Oh, you keep it in front of you, right? And you try to provide that balance that keeps you as fresh as you can be each and every day to be the best person that you can be. And, you know, a combination of exercise, but that changes as you get a little older, and you try to stay active, and by your action, you know what I mean. And yes. You know, we're at a stage of life where my oldest son's a sophomore in college and he's playing football here at Texas Tech. And my youngest son is a senior in high school. And so he's got a decision to make as to what he's going to do next. So we're so close to being empty nesters, but you know, in the phase of life and parenthood that we've been through, you know, your time is occupied by your kids, by your job and your kids and your family. And that's what keeps me energized. It keeps me focused, and continues to try to provide that balance so I can be the best I can be, both you know, at home and then also leading Texas Tech.
That's awesome. Well, hey, look, I really appreciate you taking the time today, Kirby. It's gone pretty quickly here. I hope you feel that way based on a couple of questions I asked. But thanks for joining me and sharing a little bit about your career and your thoughts on what's going on in the industry and all the good things that are happening at Texas Tech.
Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure to be on with you, and it's great to see you, and wish you nothing but continued success. So thanks for having me today.
I look forward to seeing you in person again here pretty soon. That'll be great. So you've been listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. This week's guest has been Kirby Hocut, one of college athletics' most respected athletic directors, and he is in Lubbock, Texas at Texas Tech University. Hope you'll listen to this broadcast wherever you listen to your audio podcast each week, and that you'll also join us on YouTube from time to time. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see you next time.